and guide her through the night with the light from above, from the mountains to the prairies, to the oceans wide with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Rob Havers, president of the George C. Marshall Foundation.
Ladies and gentlemen, a very good afternoon. Will you please please join me in thanking D.C. Washington with one more round of applause. That was magnificent. I don't think we needed a microphone for D.C. You will for me. Please be seated. It is a very great pleasure to welcome such a distinguished audience to be part of our fourth presentation of the Good Pastor Award to somebody who is truly deserving of the recognition he is about to receive. General John Jumper, former Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force and the retired CEO of Leidos. General Jumper graduated from the Virginia Military Institute in 1966, received a commission in the Air Force and served with distinction for 39 years, completing his service as Chief of Staff. His career was similar to that of General George C. Marshall, another VMI graduate who began his 6 years as Army Chief of Staff as World War II began in Europe in 1939. Speaking to the graduating class at West Point, following that war, General Marshall told them that military leadership is not merely a matter of tactics and strategy, not merely a matter of courage. It involves a great many factors, of which character and loyalty are probably the most important. Following lunch today, General Jumper will discuss these and other values. Even though General Marshall, with Allied victory in hand, retired from a career in the Army that spanned some 44 years, he still had more work to do to restore the spirit and the economies of Western Europe as Secretary of State through the Marshall Plan. Later, as President of the American Red Cross, a position he felt privileged to hold as his way of honoring the many soldiers, sailors, and airmen who helped the Allies prevail. Finally, George C. Marshall served as Secretary of Defense to rebuild a fighting force once again that had been drawn down in order to fight the war in Korea. In all, George C. Marshall served this country and indeed the world for some 50 years. During that period, he had a role, and often a major role, in the major events of the first half of the 20th century. Our major mission at the George C. Marshall Foundation is to share this remarkable legacy, to return George C. Marshall to the forefront of the public consciousness where he so rightly deserves to be. We accomplish this mission through our extraordinary library and archives in Lexington, Virginia, open to researchers from around the world, and through the George C. Marshall Museum, located on the post at VMI, where we have resided for the last 50 years. We operate in Lexington as a not-for-profit, dedicated to the memory and legacy of George C. Marshall. Our new Marshall Legacy series represents a popular interpretation of Marshall's outstanding leadership career. And you can read about more of what we do in our brand new publication, Marshall Magazine, that was on your chairs at your table. George C. Marshall loved the Army. Yet often, like many capable and ambitious leaders, he felt frustrated by the slow turn of its machinery. After 37 years in uniform, when most would have called it a career, he finally rose to that position as Chief of Staff and began an unparalleled and extraordinary period of the next 12 years as a national and international leader. The breadth of his accomplishment is indeed staggering. If I were to sum him up, I would say that General Marshall is probably without peer, perhaps except for General George Washington. Marshall, like Washington, won in peace as he did in war. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here today. Please now enjoy your lunch. The Good Pastor Award honors the life and service of General Andrew J. Goodpaster, a longtime trustee and chairman of the Marshall Foundation, who was a champion of the Marshall legacy, an American hero, and an extraordinary public servant. Today, we are delighted to have you all here for this wonderful occasion, because this award is presented to American business leaders, politicians, and military leaders who have served this nation in exemplary ways, like General Goodpaster, have exhibited courage, selfless service, patriotism, and leadership throughout their lives. I'm honored to help tell the story today of why General Jumper is so deserving of this honor. General Jumper is this kind of leader: tireless, fearless, selfless. He has been determined in his pursuit of excellence during a long and distinguished career in the United States Air Force, a position that put him in a similar position to General Marshall all those years ago. Following a distinguished 39-year career, General Jumper retired in 2005 as the 17th Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force. In his 4 years as the senior uniformed official in America's Air and Space Service, General Jumper led more than 700,000 men and women through the global war on terror, force modernization, and strategic transformation. Among his many assignments were commander of Air Combat Command at Langley Air Force Base, commander of United States Air Forces Europe and Allied Air Forces Central Europe, and senior military assistant to the Secretary of Defense. Working with his civilian and military colleagues, he administered annual budgets in excess of $100 billion and oversaw the delivery of numerous air and space combat support systems. He was a fighter pilot, commanded an F-16 fighter squadron, commanded two fighter wings, and accumulated some 5,000 flying hours, including more than 1,400 hours in combat in Vietnam and Iraq. Like Generals Marshall and Goodpaster before him, service has been a resounding theme in General John Jumper's life. Soon after leaving active duty, he joined the board of directors of SAIC, and in 2012, the supposedly retired General Jumper was drafted in to become its CEO. General Jumper continues to serve his alma mater, the Virginia Military Institute, as a member of the Board of Visitors, and he is a member also of the Board of Directors of the Museum of the American Revolution. Now, one person who knows about General Jumper's extraordinary service is Air Force Secretary Debbie James. Secretary James has served in many leadership positions during her career. As a staff member for the House of Representatives, she came to know Washington very well. Later, she served as Assistant Secretary of Defense for Reserve Affairs for 5 years, keeping her in touch with the uniformed services. She has served, too, on the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, the Dakowitz, an organization formed by a remarkably prescient George C. Marshall, the Secretary of Defense. She is today an expert in homeland and national security. Educated at Duke and Columbia Universities, she joined the team at SAIC, becoming Executive Vice President for Communications and Government Affairs, and then President of the company's technical services sector. 2 years ago, she was confirmed as Secretary of the Air Force, just the second woman to hold that position. Please help me welcome the 23rd Secretary of the United States Air Force, Deborah Lee James.
Thank you very much, Rob, for that very kind introduction. And I think the audience would agree with me. You could have said anything, and it would have sounded so good. Love the way he talks. Many thanks also to the George C. Marshall Foundation for inviting me, including me, in today's event to help honor a man who I am very proud to tell you is a long-term colleague. He has been a mentor to me throughout my life. He's been my boss, and best of all, I now call him my friend. And, of course, I'm speaking of General John Jumper. And by the way, the best thing is not John Jumper being here today. The best thing is that he's got a veritable posse of family and friends, all of whom are here today to help him celebrate. Ellen, it's always fantastic to see you, and it was wonderful to meet your daughters, Kathy and Janet, who are here today. Melissa is deployed in Qatar, but I understand coming home next week, she'll be home for Christmas. By the way, all three girls are airmen as well, not bragging. Just saying. And we don't want to forget those handsome grandsons who are here today, Ryan and John. Baby Claire and baby Chelsea are not here. They're a little too young, but the whole gang is here. And incidentally, grandson John is celebrating his 7th birthday. Let's give it up for John. Woo-hoo. Good deal all the way around. All right, well, General Jumper epitomizes the spirit of this award's namesake, the General Andrew J. Goodpaster Award. And I have been fortunate to have known this man and worked with General Jumper for the better part of 22 years. I was going through the mental math last night on this, 22 years. And it's also been my enormous pleasure, and I have been the beneficiary of being able to cross paths with him a couple of times during his two very important careers. And when I say his two very important careers, he's had more than two, but the two that I am most familiar with are, of course, his Air Force career and his business career. So let me begin with the Air Force. Now, most of us in this room would probably have our best recollections of General Jumper as being the 17th Chief of the Air Force. And, of course, that was very important, but it's not my actual first memory of General Jumper. You see, I first knew him as Major General Jumper back in the year 1993 when he was serving in that senior military assistant position to then Secretary of Defense, Les Aspin. And as I recall the story, Les Aspin and me and about five other members of the House Armed Services Committee staff arrived on day one of the brand new Clinton administration with this brand new Secretary of Defense, and that is my first memory of meeting John Jumper. And what an exciting period that was. For me, my first assignment was the assistant to the Secretary for Legislative Affairs, and eventually, as you heard, I went on and I became Assistant Secretary of Reserve Affairs. But I remember those earliest days extremely well, and if I had to sum those early days up in one single word, I would say chaos. It felt absolutely like chaos. I remember showing up in the building with my colleagues and having two initial thoughts. My first thought was, wow, we're in charge. And my second thought was, uh-oh, now what do we do? And that's literally the way it was. But if there is one thing, there are many things, but the one thing that General Jumper I learned right away is very, very good at, and that is managing through chaos. and doing it with calm and doing it with professionalism. None of us knew the ways of the Pentagon. None of us had worked in the Pentagon before. And so how to get things done, how to move important policy positions through, how to make sure that we're doing the right thing from a budgeting standpoint. This is what he was able to steer us in the right direction and get us headed in the right way. And, of course, coming from Capitol Hill, you all are well aware that deadlines don't mean exactly the same thing over there as they mean in the Pentagon. So we had to get that discipline instilled as well. But thanks to him, we all learned a lot from that experience, and we went on and we got through it all together. So he's fantastic when it comes to these chaotic situations, and he's also a phenomenal strategist, an exceptional public servant, and someone who genuinely cares very, very deeply about people. By the way, a couple of those other staffers that I mentioned, we all arrived on day one. One of them was Rudy De Leon, who went on to become the Deputy Secretary of Defense. Another one was Eric Fanning, who today is the acting Secretary of the Army. So you taught us all well, General Jumper. You taught us well. I think, how did he become so great? I think it starts back to his earliest days, because he had some really, really terrific role models that I think inspired him to greatness. And I'll start first and foremost with your dad. So General Jumper's dad, for those of you who may not know, enlisted in the Army Air Corps, and he rose up through the ranks, and he eventually retired as a two-star general. So he had that spirit of service from his earliest days. And in fact, John lived on the same street with many of the Mercury 7 astronauts when he was a teenager, and he certainly idolized their achievements. And later, of course, he went on to VMI. That helped to solidify his moral compass, which has been pointed north ever since. Many good things happened at VMI, and we'll talk some about that later, but I think the most important thing that happened at VMI was he met the eventual CEO of Jumper Inc. VMI, and of course I'm speaking here of Ellen, and that is indeed where they started their life's journey together. So that's a little bit about the Air Force, which, as you heard, is his first career. I think it will ever be the best career, if I'm not mistaken. 39 years and eventually rising to become, of course, the Chief of Staff. His first day, by the way, as Chief of Staff of the Air Force was September 11th, 2001. So remember that managing through chaos story? You don't get any more chaotic than that, and yet you did it. But, of course, he had that second career, and this time it was in business, and I got lucky again because, of course, my path crossed with John Jumper's in business as well. As you heard, he joined the SAIC Board of Directors in 2007. He became CEO in 2012. And during this same period, I was with the company in a variety of roles, as you heard. General Jumper back then did just an amazing job presiding over a period at the company, which, at least I'll speak as a former employee, seemed rather, here comes that word again, chaotic to me. It was a time of a lot of leadership changes. We were downsizing, we were reorganizing, and there's a lot of other industry partners. Many, many of you have gone through similar periods in your company's history. Eventually, of course, SAIC actually spun into two separate companies. Well, General Jumper became the CEO and chairman of Leidos after the spin. I personally stayed on at SAIC until I left for the Air Force. But let me go back prior to the spin. I remember very, very vividly one time attending a board of directors meeting. We were off-site in a hotel environment, and this was a period in which the board was, we were once again going through a leadership change with our CEO, and the board had been searching for a new CEO. And John was part of that search committee. So they searched and they searched and they looked internally and they looked externally, and months went by. And finally, at this particular meeting, they announced their selection. They announced that they looked high and low, and the best candidate of all was John Jumper. So there you go. I'm not so sure you were happy with that. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure you were drafted. I heard that word go by earlier. But the worst part of that day, he told me later on, was that he had to call Ellen to tell her what he had done. And he called her up and pulled her out of a spa appointment, of all things. So note to self, if there's bad news in the future, wait till the spa appointment is done. Do not stop it in midstream. But SAIC and Leidos aren't the only companies that have benefited from John's skill and insight. He's been a senior advisor to private equity firms, served on boards for a host of large companies and nonprofit organizations. And I know you retired from Leidos, John, in 2014, but you also know that you absolutely suck at retirement. And from the sounds of it, you are plenty busy yet still today. I just want to thank you now from the bottom of my heart for all that you have done for our Air Force, for our country, all that you have done for me personally. Thank you for always, always being an outstanding leader, a mentor for our young people. Thank you for your integrity and your service before self and your excellence in all that you do. You've brought it to every table, and we've all benefited from those core values that you've given to us. I want to close, ladies and gentlemen, with the four jumper rules of life. Some of you perhaps have heard these, but I think we can all benefit from these rules of life in both our personal and professional capacities. Rule number one, doing the right thing when your character is challenged is what creates your most meaningful memories. Rule number two, the things that make you feel best about yourself will be the things that you do for others. Rule number three, always do the best at the job that you have right now, because the next job and the next job and the next job after that, it'll take care of itself. And rule number four, you will be uplifted not by material rewards, but you'll be uplifted by moral and spiritual rewards. Well, the George C. Marshall Foundation couldn't have picked a more worthy recipient for this Good Pastor Award, for this very prestigious award. Thank you, thank you, thank you, John Jumper. Thank you.
Secretary James, thank you indeed for your keen insight and wonderfully warm personal comments. Jay Adams knows John Jumper very well also. As classmates, as brother rats at VMI, they developed that lifelong bond that distinguishes graduates of that fine institution. We are fortunate indeed to have Mr. Adams serve as the chairman of the Board of Trustees of the George C. Marshall Foundation. And I ask Mr. Adams to join me on stage to present the Andrew J. Goodpastor Award for 2015. Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Rob. I would now like to ask General Jumper to join me on stage for the presentation of the award. We are here today to honor General Jumper for his service to his nation and to the world. General Jumper, in recognition of your selfless service to the country, as Air Force Chief of Staff, as a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and for your leadership in the United States Air Force, whose life and career embody courage, selflessness, patriotism, and dedication to leadership, it is my honor to present you with the Andrew J. Goodpastor Award for 2015.
Thank you, my brother at Jay Adams, and thank you, Rob, and thank you, Debbie, for those warm words. Here today, surrounded by family, many families that come together in a way that I will tell you is overwhelming. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this turnout today. And many families are represented. Of course, I have my VMI family, represented by the class of 66, and others who are here from VMI, General P. Thank you so much for being here tonight, sir, our superintendent. And I think he's been my boss most of my life that I can remember. General P is in one capacity or another. And, of course, my Air Force family. Ed Eberhardt's here tonight. I remember that day 9/11. Ed was the commander of North American Air Defense Command. Ed is the guy who gave the order to bring all the airplanes down and close the airspace. Tough decisions that we were making, guys like Ed, we're making pretty much on our own because it was the right thing to do, and because in the chaos of that moment, we had great leaders that were taking advantage of a lifetime worth of training to make these right and correct decisions. My Air Force family goes back, as was said, 39 years, and a lot of exciting memories. Flying airplanes at the weapons school, et cetera. A great family to be a part of. Of course, my NATO family. We have the colonel here from Germany tonight. We have the legacy of General Goodpaster, who was NATO Supreme Allied Commander at the time that I was stationed over there, 1970 to 74, as a young captain, sitting alert from Bentwaters Air Base in England at the time. And, of course, you have your corporate family. Roger Krone is here, the CEO of Leidos, and replaced me, Mike Leiter, who you will see on TV every night. He's a commentator. He's also our Chief of Marketing and Strategy at Leidos. Tony Morocco is here with the team from SAIC from the time before the separation. And I'm absolutely honored that you all would come out today. Members of Rolls-Royce North America at this table over here who have come out. The board that I sit on with Marion Blakely is the CEO, is a marvelous group. Fred McCorkle, our board leader, thank you for being here, Fred. And members of Jacobs Engineering, I was on their board for a while before I went to SAIC, and they're here tonight, too, today, too. So, and then, of course, your real family. I got the real family sitting at the table back there with two daughters. You've already heard from Ryan, who's performed for you already, and John, whose birthday it is. My daughter, Kathy, and her husband, Matt, and my other daughter, Janet, and her husband, Sean. Our third daughter, Melissa, will be back from the desert next week, and her husband is deployed with her. So these are the families. They all come together, and after a while, all these professional connections become very personal, and you do begin to call them family, and proudly so. So I cannot tell you, Jay, how thrilled I am to receive this recognition. Undeserved, I'm overwhelmed by all of this, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for what you've done here today. Thank you all very much.
General Jumper, thank you very much for those wonderful remarks. We are privileged now indeed to be able to enjoy a conversation on values involving General Jumper and Mr. Dan Clark, who will moderate the discussion. Dan Clark is a professional motivational speaker, author, and CEO of Clark Success Systems, a renowned public speaker and a true friend of John Jumper and all the United States Armed Forces. Please welcome Dan Clark.
Thank you. With all due respect, sir, I'm not a motivational speaker. I hate these guys. They always say stupid things like we become what we think about, and that's not true. If that was true, I'd have been a woman by the time I was 12 years old. I want to be an inspirational speaker. May I just set the tone for one moment before I have an opportunity to interview one of my heroes, one of the great human beings of all time, and that's what he has in common, obviously, with General Marshall and General Goodpaster. Let's just face it, we're all getting old. Time is ticking. Any of you bend over to pull up your socks and think, what else can you accomplish while you're way down there? If that started to happen to you, you go to bed healthy, you wake up injured, and all we did was lay there, your hips asleep, your foot hurts. We're all getting old, and the reality of time is this. Today you've never been this old before, and today you'll never be this young again. So right now matters, and every right now matters. Young John is celebrating his 7th birthday. General Jumper is 70 years of age. I couldn't help but hear the crack in the voice of his VMI classmates as they were trying their best to be 20 again. And so with all due respect, in my perspective, the reason why we're gathered here is to perpetuate the life and times and the values and the notion that made our America the greatest country on our planet, with all due respect to Germany, sir. The notion the founding fathers had in mind something called selflessness or service before self. And the only way we're going to teach that on to and pass that on to future generations is if we tell the stories. And as a speaker, I speak all over the world, every industry. I'm hoping that I can suck up in a way so that I can get a free Rolls Royce before the end of the day is over. But in the corporate arena, with all due respect, before I impose on General Jumper's memory, in the military, we give medals to those who are willing to sacrifice themselves so that others may live. With all due respect to those of us who are in the corporate arena, we give bonuses to those who are willing to sacrifice others so that they may survive. We've got it all backwards. And I know this is a fundraiser, so I might have just ruined the entire event. But my question on a daily basis is, where do these airmen, where do these soldiers, where do these Marines, where do these sailors come from? And it's based on the stories that they've experienced and now gathered here with the Marshall Foundation, a chance for us to reminisce and reflect on the stories that taught us the principles that govern our lives, that govern our corporations, that allow us to be here to celebrate the life of an extraordinary human being. And I love and honor and respect Deborah James. I'm such a fan of hers, and I've been in her audience so many times, one of the great speakers, the same offstage as she is on stage. But come on, that was a little sweet. What you had to say about him was like him being at his own funeral, and you're introduced by this British, eloquent, velvet-voiced gentleman. So let's just talk and let's get down to some of the stories that really have molded General Jumper to be the man, the hero, the father, the husband that we know him to be. One thing that intrigues me so much about the stories that I've heard about General Jumper is one where we celebrate him as a command pilot, 5,000 hours, and he's flown every aircraft you can imagine. You can look it up in his resume. And the thing that intrigues me is that the very first of his list is a C-7, and then it just goes on to the next aircraft and the next aircraft and the next aircraft. And if you know what a C-7 Caribou transport airplane really is, that's what he flew in Vietnam. No, he didn't have the swagger of a fighter jet pilot who walks like he sat on something hot. He was flying a C-7 Caribou mission to airlift and drop these paratroopers into the most dangerous part and behind the lines and resupply them. And that's a noble mission with 7 soldiers, Marines, airmen at a time, bailing out and landing behind enemy lines. But in the monsoon season, his mission turned to airlifting chickens, pigs, and cows. So I just want to ask him right out of the chute, what was the expression on the face of a chicken as you pushed him out of the airplane, and did it ever get old?
Dan, this is pretty noble work, you know. So, we flew the C-7s for the Special Forces, and during the monsoons, you couldn't land because the places you landed at these special forces camps were wide spots in the road, usually about 500 feet long. So during the monsoons, you had to airdrop the stuff in. Of course, you didn't tell the chickens, cows, and the pigs that you were about to airdrop them, because the last time they flew, you sort of let them off gently out of the tailgate. So when you push a bushel of chickens out the back of a C-7, you don't know how big the eyes of a chicken can get until they hit the slipstream at 150 miles an hour and lose all their feathers. But here again, we were back supporting these special ops guys in the camps near the villages in South Vietnam. And you talk about selfless service. These were people back there working with the villages and with the people every single day, trying to, again, impart the values that we value as a nation, as a people, to people who have never been exposed to such things before. And it was worth watching all the chickens, cows, and pigs go out the back of a C-7 to be able to do that, Dan. And
to imagine what your cockpit must have smelled like,
yes,
about halfway
exactly.
through
you don't
as
know.
The fear came to fruition. And
you don't want to know. And then the heat came back. You know, after the rain, only, it was the heat. This is
you're
not
the
good.
Only pilot that ever really wished that they had been shot down while they were
right.
flying
yeah.
their mission. I understand. You know, as you look up the details and the statistics on General Marshall and General Goodpaster, and to see what made them who they are, the similarities weren't that many. When I started looking up General Jumper's life, obviously General Goodpaster, he graduated second in his class at West Point out of 456 cadets.
Not me.
Second in his class, which meant he only had one B his entire college career. Well, we have his VMI classmates. Isn't that ironic that General Jumper, he only had one B his entire college career? And with his classmates here buying table number nine, they're so grateful because General Jumper was the one that made the top 99% of your graduating class possible.
That's why they're here.
I know. And General Marshall played. He was an all-conference tackle on the football team. General Jumper, he also tried to play football, as you'll vouch for. And he also played guard and tackle. His mission was just a little different. He guarded the water bucket and then tackled anyone who came near it. Not quite as elaborate. Obviously, we know that General Marshall was responsible for this Marshall Plan that brought the love and respect from the European community as he single-handedly marshaled, I'll use that word, the economic and emotional recovery of Western Europe after the war. Well, General Jumper, he had kind of a similar experience in his life. And with all of these individuals represented in this room, I just want to ask you honestly, did you ever feel somewhat inadequate when you were called to be the chief of the Air Force? Or maybe your feeling of inadequacy even started earlier than that. Can you share something that perhaps helped us understand where you started this climb in leadership, maybe when you were a brigadier general?
Oh,
that
yeah,
brings
yeah.
back a
no,
memory.
I can think of several. But the one that probably stands out the most is when I first, I was the commander of the 57th Fighter Weapons Wing at Nellis Air Force Base. This was an elite outfit. Under my command was Red Flag, the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds, the U.S. Air Force Weapons Schools, all of the secret stuff all around Nellis Air Force Base. I am somebody. I'm flying with the aggressors. I'm having a good time. The phone rings. It's General Bob Russ, commander of Air Combat Command, says, Jumper, you need to go to the Pentagon because you can't get promoted to 2 stars unless you've had a joint tour, and you haven't had any joint tours. So I said, oh, boss, come on, what am I going to be? He says, you're going to be the DDPMA, Deputy Director of Politico-Military Affairs. I said, General Russ, sir, I'm from Paris, Texas. I have a degree in electrical engineering. I barely got through, as these guys know. I've got to go do this diplomatic stuff, he said. Yeah, just don't do it. Get your ticket punched. We'll bring you right back. The month is August 1990. I get there 1 week later, Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. We get called into the National Military Command Center. We all go in there. It's General Colin Powell, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a hero, a mystical figure to all of us, stands in front of about a dozen of us. I'd look around and say, where is everybody? Well, everybody's on vacation. It's August. They start doling out assignments. How are we going to deal with this invasion of Kuwait? Well, there's only one guy left to go with the Secretary of State. Jumper, it's you. I've been there a week. I haven't found my in-basket yet. Colin Powell says, who's this guy? The director of the Joint Staff, General Mike Carnes, says, oh, he's a good guy, sir. He knows everything. I call Ellen. I say, Ellen, bring my clothes out to Andrews. We're getting on the airplane right now. I gather a bag of slides and stuff. I go out to the airplane. It's the old Air Force One, the Boeing 707. I get way in the back with the press, right by the bathroom. Secretary of State Baker gets on the airplane, stands in the front opening there of the airplane and says, where is my military guy? I said, oh, my God. And I get up sheepishly and walk by all of these people who fill this airplane from the State Department. I walk up there. I'm there with Margaret Tuckwiler, the Secretary of State, and Dennis Ross. There's four of us in the forward cabin. And the Secretary of State looks at me and says, Jumper, your place in this mission is more important than mine. And I said, we are in deep trouble.
That's not how you explained it
to me
on the phone.
Well, I said another word. I know that. Yeah, okay. He said, your job is going to be to explain to the president of Turkey, President Özal, how we have to shut off the oil supply that comes through Turkey coming out of Iraq as part of the strategy. And in order to do that, he's got to be absolutely convinced that the military response to this invasion is going to be a serious response. Your job is to convince him of that. I get up and I go back and I work. We fly through the night. I work all night. I get no sleep. I get all of the slides that I brought. Thank God they got superior communications on this airplane. I'm talking to people in the Joint Staff. I put this briefing together. We arrive in Turkey. I used to kid that when I got this job as a DDPMA, I used to have this bandana that Ellen gave me, and it was a bandana that had all of the countries of the continents of, and it had the nations with their capitals on it, so that I could look when somebody, one of my foreign area officers who knew everything about the world and I knew nothing, would come in and say, "We got to go to Rwanda." I could go, "Oh, okay, that's where he is," and I'd pretend they. So, for 6 months, people thought I had pneumonia. So I took my bandana out, and I looked up Ankara, Turkey, and now I know where we're going. We arrive, and we go to the presidential palace. The doors swing open. President Özal is standing there. We go up the stairs. Özal and the Secretary of State go in by themselves. Now, the ambassador doesn't even go in. This is a big hurt for the State Department folks. 10 minutes later, he opens the door and says, Jumper, come in here. So now there's three of us in the room. Everyone in the State Department who's on that airplane hates my guts because somehow they think I've maneuvered my way into the inner sanctum here. I'm in there. We sit down. I'm scared to death. I'm fearless. I've had 1,400 hours of combat, as Dan said. I'm fearless, but I'm legitimately afraid that somebody's going to ask me a question. Baker says, President Özal, General Jumper, now we'll give you the briefing. I give him the briefing. I go through this briefing that I put together, at the end of which Secretary of State says, I need you now, Mr. President, to do this for the nation. The president says, yes, he will. And then Baker says, sir, we have General Jumper here from the Joint Chiefs. He's been on the intimate detail planning of every aspect of this operation. General Jumper, if you had one thing you could ask of the president of Turkey in order to make this thing a success, what would it be? ...1,400 combat hours, I legitimately broke out in a sweat because I had to answer this question. And I wanted to turn to Baker and say, Mr. Secretary, we're supposed to rehearse this, you know what I mean? Anyway, I babble something about combat search and rescue and doing exercises in the North Park. And we walked out of the door, and Secretary of State says to the assembled crowd, Jumper got us everything we needed. I come back to Colin Powell when I get back home and say, General Powell, sir, do you know that the biggest idiot on your staff was riding in that airplane? He said, Jumper, don't worry about it. In that group, you were the smartest guy there. You did a great job. I got this wonderful note from Secretary Baker saying you're a hero. So take it and run with it. That was my story. Inadequate? Yes, totally inadequate.
Awesome. The history, walking encyclopedia of history. And I've been curious, as I've had a chance to know General Jumper since 2005, of what events or what individuals have molded his life. He was an executive to General Creech, who was famous for saying the purpose of a leader is to grow more leaders. As you recall, those of you who are military history buffs, General Creech was followed by General Mahoney.
O'Malley.
Yeah. O'Malley, thank you, sir. And O'Malley was sadly killed in a plane crash with his wife, and General Jumper was supposed to be on the plane. And at the last minute was asked by the general to leave the plane because he probably wasn't needed as the exec. And if you think about today, and as we connect the dots to that one moment in time that literally changed the events of September 11th and how we responded because he was the chief in charge, I can't help but think of the words of Winston Churchill, who at the beginning of World War II, when the Battle of Britain broke out and they were bombing his beloved England and he was forced into an underground bunker, and his only access to the free world, his people, was a microphone, if you will, to keep them fired up to never say never. Winston Churchill said something, and I can just see and hear General Jumper echoing those words in every single conversation, in every meeting I've ever been in his presence. Winston Churchill said, "It is not enough to say I will do my best. We must succeed in doing that which is necessary." If that's not General Jumper to a T, I don't know what is. And one of the things that I want to wind our time down with are two stories that I just need to ask you to share, because every single time I've been on the platform with him or been in an audience, he has never shared these personal experiences from his life that have molded him into the man that he is, into the leader that he is. But when he was a two-year-old, his mother and himself were asked and invited to board a Liberty ship. And they sailed out of Seattle, Washington to Japan to greet his father, who was there during the occupation. And his father's job as a young Air Force leader was to take the fighter jets out of the crates, put them back into operational capacity, and then test fly them. And in those days, he would put young two-year-old Johnny on his lap in a P-51 and take off to get that check ride. My, oh my, have times changed. His dad was a scratch golfer. And in Paris, Texas, I can just see John meeting Ellen at VMI. Where are you from? Paris. Thinking he's all that in a bag of chips. His dad became the interim golf pro at Paris Country Club as a young teenager. And when they awarded the new head pro job to someone else, his father got ticked off and joined the Army Air Corps. That's why he's here today. One moment in time changes everything. And probably the two most favorite, impactful stories I've ever heard you share, sir, one about Lackland Air Force Base and one about your beloved PJs. May I ask you to wind down our time together by sharing those two stories and then give me back the microphone so I can conclude by lip-syncing three Britney Spears songs so we'll never be the same.
Well, the Lackland story, most of you in the room have heard before, and I tell it every time because it does carry a lot of meaning. It gets to the values that I think are so important. When Ellen and I got good and fed up with what was going on in Washington, D.C., especially when I was the chief, we'd go out to Lackland Air Force Base. At Lackland Air Force Base, for those who don't know, we bring in 1,000 new airmen into the Air Force every Friday morning. And it's a big crowd, 1,000 airmen coming into the Air Force, and in the audience there are 2,000 or 3,000 family and loved ones. It's a big crowd. And you go out there and you hear these youngsters put on this marvelous parade, and they come off the parade field. And the fun thing to do was to sit back in the back, sort of hidden away, and watch these youngsters come back together with their parents after 8 weeks, after 8 short weeks. and watch the children and the mothers walk past one another, the mothers not recognizing their children. And some, every time, you'd see the same thing. Some youngster there with his mother and mom, it's me, and the mother absolutely astonished, not believing that this is the child they left off 8 short weeks ago. And I remember one father from Oklahoma, I tell this all the time, one father from Oklahoma says, "General, I don't know how you did this. This isn't the same kid I dropped off here 8 weeks ago. The kid I dropped off here 8 weeks ago had a pierced ear and a pierced eye and a pierced nose and looked like he fell down the steps with his tackle box in his hand." And now they're saying, "Ma'am and sir," and standing up straight. And the mothers would always say, "How did you do that?" And it was the same thing. You go ask these kids the same question. I ask the same question every time. "Are you proud of yourself?" And I'd get the answer, "Sir, today's the first time my dad ever told me he was proud of me for anything. Today's the first day I've ever been proud of myself for anything." And one young lady, 19 years old, I'll never forget it, says, "Sir, this is the first day I've ever felt a part of something bigger than myself." And those are the words, I think, that should resonate. When you think about General Good Pastor, who after a career as a 4-star general, gives up a star, goes back and helps the academy at West Point get themselves out of a troubled situation. General George C. Marshall, after the most difficult job you can possibly imagine as the Chief of Staff of the Army during World War II, goes back and becomes a Secretary of State, goes back and becomes a Secretary of Defense. This quality of selflessness is one which no great leader can be truly great without that quality. And as I think through those experiences at Lackland Air Force Base, I can't help but recall the qualities of patriotism and being a part of something bigger than yourself as the core values there. And then the PJ story. This is Airman Cunningham. Robert's Ridge in Afghanistan. Many know the story. This young Navy SEAL, as they were trying to insert a team on a mountaintop in Afghanistan, this young Navy SEAL gets either shot off or falls down the fast rope and hits the ground. They come under fire. The helicopter has to leave, and here's Seaman Roberts, the Navy SEAL, on the ground. The helicopters go down into the valley below, joined with another helicopter. They, on their own, decide they're going to put together a team and go back up there and get Seaman Roberts. The command structure really doesn't know much about this. We learn all this as we studied this later on. The helicopter goes back up, and one of the people on the... there were 3 airmen on that helicopter, 2 PJs and a combat controller. And one of the pararescue PJs was Airman Jason Cunningham. They go up there and land, and they come under heavy fire immediately. They're on the ground. The helicopter becomes disabled. They're taking wounded on the helicopter. Cunningham pulls them off the helicopter and starts to administer them the best way he can. And during the course of this, he becomes wounded himself. And several months later, I went out to Kirtland Air Force Base to present the Air Force Cross to Jason Cunningham's widow, Teresa, and their 2 young daughters were there, ages 2 and 4. Every person who was on that helicopter who was still alive showed up for that ceremony. And they told me, these are Army Rangers that told me, that when Cunningham knew he wasn't going to make it, he was giving instructions to the people who were the survivors on what to do to keep the worst of the wounded alive until they could be rescued. And Teresa Cunningham, then 24 years old, went on to graduate from ROTC and come into the Air Force as a second lieutenant. And so when you think about selfless service, when you think about this ultimate sacrifice from this family that gave of themselves, these are the values that make this nation great. We need to remember this today as we think about the situation we're in and how we're going to get ourselves out of the situation we're in. And that, I think, when you talk about values, I think this resonates actually with all of us when you take just a moment to get past all of the animus and think about the things that are truly important.
Thank you, General. Life is a story. And so I think I might be so bold as to say I'd like to represent all of us here who have been guests of the Marshall Foundation to thank you for your vision, to thank you for your passion and your relentless pursuit of passing on the values that he so eloquently lived by. And illuminating these three core values of the Air Force is what we're all about. And as they've been labeled as nouns, and the Marshall Foundation with General Jumper Stories turns them into action verbs, I think this has been a very, very appropriate day. May I remind us that we need to take these moments more seriously in our families, in our communities, in our companies to reflect and to get away from the distractions of family, the deadlines of work, and once again reconnect with the values and the founding notions that our forefathers put forth that have made this city the greatest capital city on the planet and have made, with all due respect, America the greatest country on our planet. It's fun to be in a room with people like you who are emotionally moved when a gentleman sings God Bless America. It's great to be around General Jumper and to see that he's exactly the same out of uniform as he is in uniform. That he epitomizes my description of courage. It's when you, as John Wayne said, you're scared to death and you saddle up anyway. So it's been my pleasure to be here. It's been an honor for me to participate. And on behalf of all of us, General Jumper, thank you for your example, your service, and just for being real, for being you. You remind me that even individuals like me, dumb football player, cholesterol count higher than my SAT score, can actually become a four-star general in my own way because you did it too. God bless, and you all have a great day. I'll turn the time back over to the Marshall Foundation.
Thank you, Dan.
Dan Clark, thank you so much for your moderation. General Jumper, our congratulations once again. For those of you that believe in what we do at the Marshall Foundation, believe that the legacy, the memory of George C. Marshall is worth perpetuating in the 21st century, consider becoming a member of our organization. This concludes our Good Pastor Luncheon for 2015, but join us again for 2016 for the Good Pastor Award next year. Slight change in our schedule, we will announce our recipient for next year today. General Richard Cody will be the Good Pastor Award winner in 2016, retired Vice Chief of Staff, United States Army. Thank you for being with us today, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.